Hello there. This is Sheila Hamill and Andrew Richwick with New Day Dawning. Thank you for joining us on Auckland Hospital Radio, your bedside entertainment system. Good morning. We're opening this morning's programme with songs that aren't my choice for a change. And this first one has been chosen by one of the hospital chaplains at the RVI, whom we'll be talking to shortly. So could I just ask for this first song? See if you recognise this voice, those of you in hospital.
My first choice is the song Peace by the Eurythmics. And it's a fabulous song, and I think it's just such a gentle ballad that it's one of those songs that makes me smile and simultaneously have a wee tear in my eye sometimes.
Okay, over to the Eurythmics to start our programme today.
Stop the world, just let me be.
I'm thrilled to be talking to a member of the full-time chaplaincy team at the RVI Newcastle today. I have with me here Captain Katie Watson. Good morning, Katie.
Good morning.
Thank you for talking with us this morning. Tell us a bit more about a chaplain's role here and which hospitals you all serve in.
Okay, well, the Newcastle upon Tyne's NHS Foundation Trust has a joint chaplaincy team, so we work across all of our sites. So at the Royal Victoria, the Freeman, the Dental Hospital, the Centre for Ageing and Vitality, the Centre for Life, and Newcastle Hospital's Community Services as well. So we across the entire trust, something like 14,000 staff and a significant number of inpatient beds plus outpatient clinics,
right.
Plus GP practices or other facilities in the area.
Would it be true to say you run off your feet then?
We do between about 8 and 12 miles a day on our feet around the trust, and I'm frequently seen pedalling like fury between the RVI or the Freeman and the General Hospital site on my bicycle across the town road.
So this job keeps you fit?
Certainly does.
What called you to this particular brand of ministry?
I was going through training and I came to the hospital chaplaincy team on my long-term placement nearly 11 years ago now, and as the boss man always says, you were the worst student ever because you've never left, and I've just stayed here. I was called here the minute I walked in the door. I realised there was nowhere else I ever wanted to be.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Captain.
Yep.
Where does the captain come from?
I'm a Royal Military Police veteran, so I served in the British Army for 10 years before I came here.
Which places did you serve in?
I had two tours in Bosnia and Croatia in 94-95 during the war, and I had 2 years in Northern Ireland as a searcher in Belfast, and then home garrisons in the UK and the military police training school as an instructor.
That's quite an impressive CV. What actually did you do?
The military police during the United Nations Protection Force, we were responsible for anti-bandit patrols, we were responsible for policing British forces within the United Nations. Every time a British soldier was shot at or blown up or killed on a UN tour, it's treated as murder or attempted murder, so there's a full investigation goes on there. Recording of war crimes, looking after displaced persons, providing anti-bandit patrols for the aid convoys coming up and down the routes. Road safety, because we were driving on mountains where if you go off the roads you're going onto mines or into sniper areas, so we were providing top cover there and providing escorts along the routes with the infantry.
Have you ever had to go through any post-traumatic stress courses yourself, having faced all of that? Do you mind me asking?
I think we all deal with things in our own way, and I've had help from different people and different organisations who help.
Who helps the helpers?
Yeah, and it's not always at the time. During my time in the military, we still did critical stress debriefing. That has changed now, and they do different forms of debriefing and different forms of preparation. So I think the military is far better organised these days at how we deal with what the lads and lasses see.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not easy, it's never easy. And do you disappear into your shell, or do you use those experiences to become who you are and say, not on my watch? And one of my driving forces for being a chaplain here is, A, there is nothing in this trust I can see that is as horrific as genocide in Bosnia, and my driving factor is that every person's a human being. So the staff will always tell you that my pet hate is being somebody being referred to as a bay number or a bed, because when we take people's names away and give them numbers, then we dehumanise people, and then it's very easy to no longer care properly. So I'm quite often seen jumping around the walls going, use a name, these are people, these are humans. And the staff here are absolutely phenomenal for it. It's very, very rare that you get anything like that. And the second bit to that is that there's nothing I see in the hospital that phases me. I believe all people, regardless of who they are or where they come from, are entitled and should be given respect and dignity, privacy, and be listened to as to what their needs are. And that's one of the primary roles of a chaplain, is to meet people exactly where they are on their journey and not enforce anything else on them, simply be alongside them on the journey.
Mm-hmm. So that is the chaplain's role.
Yeah.
So if I'm in a hospital bed and I need a chaplain, mm-hmm. how do I get in touch with you?
You either ask a member of the staff to contact us immediately, or your relative can leave a referral card for us outside any of the offices in a box that we pick up twice, three times a day. You can ring the hospital switchboard and ask for the on-call chaplain, or you can come across and see us at the offices if you're mobile. Somebody will come up and see you.
Mm-hmm.
Every hospital, both the RVI and the Freeman, have a yellow sheet delivered on a Wednesday at the RVI and on a Thursday at the Freeman, and they're clapped it in on a Friday at the RVI and a Sunday at the Freeman, and that tells us people who might want a bedside service or want to come to the chapel service on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
But the service is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and we do get phoned in the night for people who need us, and we come out to them regardless of what that need is.
Right. What if I don't know who to call, or you know, I'm a little bit uncertain and I'm expecting someone to come to my bed and talk to me? That's not your role now, is it?
Yes, we come along and chat to people. The staff here are absolutely fantastic at recognising the spiritual and religious and holistic needs of all of our patients.
Mm-hmm.
And so 9 times out of 10, when you're being clerked in or when you're being admitted onto a ward, the staff will say, we have a chaplaincy service, would you like to see somebody? And if people say, oh no, I'm not religious, they'll quite often say, the chaplains aren't here just for the religious, they're here for absolutely everybody, people of all faiths and no faiths.
Mm.
They're a useful person to talk to be alongside. They're in the hospital, they're around all the time, they understand the environment you're in, and they can be a support to you in whatever way you need. So the staff are very much our advocates as much as we're the staff's advocates.
That's an excellent working relationship, isn't
it? It's fantastic. We're completely integrated as part of the multidisciplinary team, and I'm immensely proud of how the chaplains are regarded in the trust. A lot of hard work has gone on over the years by the senior chaplains, Nigel and David, who've been here for 25 years and 19 years. They've built up those relationships and then mentored in as youngsters into how it is to be a chaplain, and but also given us enough slack to be able to become our own people and work in our own ways.
Mm-hmm. Such a difference really in the two jobs that you've had in life, army. You've been an army captain and now a hospital chaplain. What's the main difference between the two?
I don't get to carry a gun in the hospital.
Okay.
Or a baton or quick cuffs. But people say that, and actually I don't recognise there's too much of a difference. As an army officer, you are there. The motto of the Royal Military Academy is serve to lead, and the motto of my regiment was exemplar ducamus, which is by example we lead. And so for me here in the hospital, my example is how I lead, and it's not charging through the hospital carrying a gun shouting orders. Sometimes it's about sitting in the despair that is death or dying or pain, and having the leadership and the strength and the courage of mind to sit in that emptiness where there's absolutely nothing else and hold that space for people to be exactly where they need to be. If you're dealing with a victim, or you're dealing with somebody who's been a witness to something violent, or you're dealing with soldiers who've just watched a massacre in Bosnia and their rules of engagement do not allow them to engage the perpetrators, there's not much difference in the pastoral care I present to them and the pastoral care I present here. It's about meeting people where they're at and holding that space, and that's what an army officer is being about, and that's what being a chaplain is about as well. So and that and having the ability to walk 8 to 12 miles a day, survive on coffee and very little sleep.
You must have a tracker keeping track of how many miles you do a day.
I do, yes. We have often have an ongoing competition over the mileage with the porters and the delivery staff and the stores keepers, because
yes,
they clear do miles and miles as well.
Is there any role in chaplaincy which particularly is uplifting to you as a person?
It's
or any areas that fill you with dread?
Nothing fills me with dread, absolutely nothing. And as for uplifting, every single contact is different. Every single contact with a human being, there's an exchange of energy, there's an exchange of emotion, there's an exchange of experience, and each of those uplifts you. I'm a realist. It's exhausting and it's draining, and it's, you know, my children are renowned for having said once upon a time, "Mummy, if you could try being nice to us for a change and nice to the patients, that would be really good." Because I literally was just not processing it, and I was just taking and not giving any of it out anywhere else and releasing it. But you know, that was a piece of work I had to do, and now I've done that piece of work, I know what works for me. I know when I'm tired, I know when I need to say to somebody, "This one isn't for me, could one of you do that one today?" But other than that, it's the most immense privilege in the world to do this job. Mm-hmm. I don't think people could ever comprehend the depth in which we are parachuted into people's lives, sometimes at the very worst of times and sometimes at the very best of times. And because of that, it's immense privilege and it's all uplifting. There is not one day that is the same. You can have an entire day planned out and one phone call can change all of that, and you just, it's ministry on the hoof. You've got to be on the go the whole time, thinking, on your feet, changing what you're doing, being prepared to move alongside people and just be where they're at and go from there. So it's fab. It's such a challenge.
Mm.
It's fab. I never thought I'd find anything like the military when I left until I joined this trust. And between the working relationship we have with everybody in the trust across the grades, across the disciplines, to the trust's appreciation of my military background and that Wilco attitude and ethos that I bring, to the mix across the chaplaincy team of experiences, both life and theological and churchmanship, and where we all stand. And yet we're four of us full-time, two Roman Catholic staff, we've got an honorary imam, and we've got honorary Jewish rabbis who serve alongside us, plus a team of nearly 80 volunteers who come alongside and help us.
Mm-hmm.
It's just fab. It's just amazing. This trust and the chaplaincy department and everybody who works alongside us, just top notch. Just a joy to come to work.
Shall we have another piece of music? Katie, the choice is yours this morning. Any song at all?
It's going to have to be Dancing Queen, as used in the original Mamma Mia, because the first time I met the rest of the troops here in the chaplaincy team, they were all dressed in scrubs practicing Dancing Queen moves ready for the hospital show, and I thought, I'm either being stitched up here or this is genuinely the best team in the world ever.
And you found it was.
It's just brilliant. And we all still sing Dancing Queen. So.
We'll all sing and dance along with this one, shall we?
You can dance.
How do you fit time in for your family?
I wake them up when I get in about 3 a.m. say hi. So now, if I'm off, I'm off, and that's one of the joys of chaplaincy. I mean, we've always got a first on call, we've always got a second on call, so at the minute it's about 50% of our lives we're on call. You know, it takes somebody to be off on leave and then that all steps up as well. But when I'm off, I'm off, and I'm off with my kids, or I'm out. I'm an ultra runner, so I have long, long distances to run. If I'm struggling and if I'm tired and grumpy, my family tend to throw trainers at me and ask whereabouts in the country I want to be dropped off to run home, because they've had enough of me and they know I need to get out and run, because I don't do well being caged. I play rugby, I coach rugby. I try and do stuff alongside my kids. We've got a camper van, we escape when we can. And,
you teach as well, Katie?
Yeah,
what do you teach?
I've been down. I used to do early years nursery PE, which was just great fun. It was just fabulous because the kids are just awesome and they're so hilarious and they tell you how it is. And I'm a rugby coach as well, so under 9s rugby I coach.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, it's just good.
I can see you have not just a refreshing role here, you seem so fit for the job. Can I ask, is there a prophet in you with a word for the church?
Explain. Go ahead. I'm not...
A prophetic role is to say the church today how it is. What can the church do more of?
I think the thing about chaplains is it can take us 45 minutes to get from our office to wherever it is we've just been called, because people stop to talk to us all the time, because they know us, they trust us, and they love us, because we're there for the good and the bad. Like I said, we deliver the yellow sheets every week, and we collect them twice a week. Every ward in this hospital, both the hospitals, is walked. We're available all the time, we're out and about all the time, we're a presence all the time, and we're not just angels of doom. We always say to the folks, if you've been promoted, if you're getting engaged, if you're coming back to work with your little one, doing a back to work, you know, coming in to meet the baby thing, if you've passed your exams, if you're going on to something new, come and tell us, invite us to the parties, because we want to know the good. Because in knowing the good, in knowing the good news, and in knowing you, we're able to support you when things are a bit rougher. And, you know, when we've had families who've gone through an awful time, and then they come back and to show us and let us meet their new baby, or when we're asked to baptise little ones, or when we're invited to weddings or things, for the staff and for our patients and relative groups, it shows that we're recognised of who we're at. And actually, here at the RVI at the moment, we don't have a chapel space. It's in the middle of the refurbishment, so it's closed at the moment. Mm-hmm. The Freeman Chapel is open 24 hours a day, but we don't sit in there 24 hours a day. We're always out and about with the folks. Before I'd seen you this morning, I'd already done a 45-minute teaching session with some nurses in the cancer centre. I've got the trust induction to do this afternoon. I've already been out to see some very sick patients. I've been down to the Children's Heart Unit to see a little one that I've been journeying with for however many months. I'm out and about all the time, as are all the other chaplains, hence the 8 to 12 miles a day, and we're known and we're seen. We don't wait in the church. If Simeon and Anna had been sitting looking inwards the whole time in the temple, they would have missed the Holy Family. The truth of the matter is they were looking outwards, and if you can't get a better prophet than Simeon and Anna, you know, it's about being out there. It's about opening your church doors and walking out there and being out and about with the people where they're at.
Yes.
Not with, you must come and do this or do that or come in the church. No, actually go to where the people are and be with the people and be happy to accept where they're at.
Looking at your background in the army and the amazing work you do here, and I'm breathless just listening to you, I'm out of breath listening to you. You have so much energy. Things of the church must seem so trivial.
I think everybody has their own places in society, and the church has its place in society, and that's fantastic. And I have my place in society, and what may seem trivial to me is probably very important to some people, and likewise what seems important to me maybe I'll be very trivial to others. And I think, again, it'd be very hypocritical to be completely critical of somebody else's role or vocation when I don't see all of it, whereas in people don't see all of what chaplains do. They must think we come in on a Sunday morning, do a service and disappear off, and actually our service time in liturgy, for example, is a tiny, tiny amount of what we do, but the sacredness of what we do in every encounter is there the whole time. So I think it's about understanding where each people are at and going with that.
Have you been a Christian all of your life?
Yes.
You said you were a chorister, is that true?
I was a church chorister from 8 until literally I sang my last evensong on June 21st, 1992, and on June 22nd, 1992, I was at the Women's Royal Army Corps Training Centre, beginning basic training as a private soldier, so I sang all the way through. I can still recite most of the Book of Common Prayer evensong to people, because I sang evensong sort of three times a week, and I have always had faith. I do not have one of those defining moments on the road to wherever, and Jesus came down and said this, that and the other to me. It's just been a quiet small voice inside of me all the time. When you have seen the utter evilness and inhumanity of humans to one another in conflict and on the streets or places where there is war and devastation, it can be very hard sometimes to reconcile that with a loving, kind God who's nice to everybody, and trying to control colleagues and friends when you're watching people being slaughtered in front of your eyes and you can't do anything about that, that can be very hard as well. But actually, I have seen more acts of faith by people who profess no faith at all than sometimes in parishes and in cities and towns. And that's not just soldiers on the front line, that's nurses, medics, porters, domestics, everybody in the NHS who puts the other in front of themselves and stays on or sits alongside somebody or brings in a jar of Ovaltine because a lady on a ward has always had Ovaltine every night of her life and we don't have it on the trolley and somebody's gone home and brought Ovaltine in because they've recognised that need in the other. That's Christian acts. That's, you know, love one another as I have loved you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important.
Our reading for today actually is Jesus saying, whoever wishes to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wishes to be first among you must be the slave of all. Mm-hmm. And I think in the Northeast here we've got some tremendous people, so friendly, mm-hmm. so generous, mm-hmm. Not wanting any kind of division, just wanting to help. Yeah. And you're finding that too.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's extraordinary. It's just, you know, you see seniors stepping up to the mark and covering shifts so that juniors can go to either training or they can go to a funeral or they can go to whatever needs to happen so that they're cared for. Not just saying, well, you need to sort it out amongst yourselves, but stepping up and dealing with these things. You've got junior staff co-mentoring and looking after one another and supporting one another. You've got members of the public standing up and say, actually, no, this is wrong. These are our staff. You look at Brexit and some of the anti-immigrant conversations that have been going on, and you see members of the public turn around saying, but they're our staff and they care for us and they love us, and when our families haven't been there, it's those members of staff who've been alongside us and supported us. You know, and I think it's extraordinary. And, you know, like I said earlier, you know, an army officer's motto is serve to lead. The military police's motto is exemplar ducamus, by example we lead. Our new chief executive here talks about flourish at work and about that actually it's not just staff engagement, it's actually far more than that. It's actually be going alongside staff, being a part of that and forming who we are so that we can be absolutely fabulous human beings and allow us to do what we do.
I think that's very much what that reading says. By example we lead. Jesus was saying that, wasn't he, to his followers?
I always say in the military they always said, you feed the horses first and then the men and then the officers. And I always say that to here, well, I'll go to lunch last because... And they always laugh and say, but it's true, it's about putting the other in front of yourself. And actually, I don't have a huge cathedral, I don't have a full chorister's, I don't have every piece of silverware in the world. All I sometimes simply have is that gift of time and presence and the sitting alongside. Why do I never stand when I'm doing communion at a bedside? Why do I never sit on a chair? Why do I kneel on the floor? Because the one time in the hospital where somebody can be lower than you is when I am serving communion up to you, as is expected. It's that putting the patient higher than yourself, and in the sacrament that's important for me. Put the staff the same. The staff squat down on the hands and knees, you know, so they're face to face with patients, so that they aren't above them. And it's about recognising that somebody may be a patient in a bed, but actually they can be incredibly powerful. We have this amazing thing in hospital called hospital time, and it goes really, really slow, and it goes really, really fast. And sometimes the two don't work. And I say to folks at the end of the chapel services, we are in the hospital. And it can feel like we're removed from the world, but we're not. And actually, our ministry here in the hospital, for those of us profess faith, patient staff and relatives, is about knowing that we have the time to hold a hurting and grieving and bereaved, sad, dying world that's out there. We have the time in this hospital to hold that in prayer and to hold people's thoughts when other people are galloping around. So actually, each one of us, be you in a bed or in a sluice or an upper intake theatre, we have that time to be a part of the world and be in the world.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a special word to finish for the patients in? Do you remember that we have patients listening all over the Northeast?
We're on
community radio now as well. A lot of people are listening, and not just people in hospital. Yeah. Do you have a word for anyone who's feeling anxious and fearful? right now at this moment?
Just remember that no matter who you are or what you believe you are loved and you are lovable, and there is nothing in the world that can change that. Just be the awesome, unique human being you've been created to be, and just rest in that. It doesn't matter who you profess that you believe in or don't believe in. You're unique, fabulous and awesome, and you're loved and you're lovable.
Katie, it's been so lovely talking to you today. It really has. Could I just ask, I'll just mention Katie's name again for those of you who just come into the programme late, Captain Katie Watson. And I'm just going to ask her to choose a final song for us. Katie, thank you for giving your precious time to us today. I just feel rather guilty taking your time because you are so busy. But I really feel I've been in the presence of Jesus himself today talking to you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Katie, your final song for us this morning.
I think it's probably got to be from The Greatest Showman and the song This Is Me, because it just about epitomises what we've been saying, and about just be who you are and be just fabulous and unique and an awesome human being no matter who you are.
Let's go to it.
I am not a stranger to the dark. Hide away, they say, because we don't want your broken parts. I've learned to be ashamed of all my scars. Run away, they say, no one will love you as you are. But I won't let them break me down to dust. I know that there's a place for us, for we are glorious. When the sharpest words wanna cut me down, I'm gonna send the blood, gonna drown them out. I am brave, I am bruised, I am who I'm meant to be. This is me. Look out, 'cause here I come.